in 5,
yes.
4, 3. Well, hello there, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Confused Breakfast Podcast. Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the video rental store as a kid?
Yep.
The excitement of walking down the aisle, scanning the names and the artwork, and finally picking out the movie you were going to take home with you. Sure, it's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your house, but there was something truly special about making that trip with your buddies while listening to Bohemian Rhapsody, picking a movie out by hand, and watching it when you got home. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. I'm your host, Mike Schulte, and joining me as always, two founding members of the Shitty Beatles, Sean Pryor and AJ Vince. How the heck are you?
We're pretty good, though, I gotta say.
I think it's more of a clever name than people realize.
Yeah.
You know, we were trying to be ironic, you know.
Were the Shitty Beatles the headliner that
right.
night? Because it wasn't Crucial Tone.
Yeah,
right?
No, it definitely wasn't. They were just finishing up their set.
So they were like the shitty opener for the Shitty Beatles.
Yeah. I think they were like on their way up, you know.
They looked scared when they got to the stage. They're like, fuck, that was good.
That's right.
We're shitty by name.
Well, boys, it's time to introduce today's movie. On this episode, we discuss the second movie of more than 10 total movies that have been adapted from Saturday Night Live skits, perhaps one of the most universal and well-known comedies of the 90s, a movie whose dialogue became an instant part of 90s culture and spawned a sequel. We are, of course, talking about 1992's Wayne's World.
I kind of want to redo that. I don't know if we won't do it.
For everybody looking to find the movie, as of the recording of this episode, in early June 2022, it looks like you got to buy it. You find it anywhere? Got to buy it on the Prime or you got to own it already?
I popped my DVD in. I think it kind of comes with every house, like I've been saying, too.
Do we have a full list of that?
Yeah.
Of
like, I'll get you
what
one.
All happens? Like, I think there's a Rubik's Cube.
A Rubik's Cube's there.
Titanic box set.
Yep.
VHS box set.
What's really exciting is Sean is actually going to be moving into a new house in a couple weeks, so we might actually like find out if Sean's right about
that. Yeah, exactly.
I think when I get there, they are usually tucked in, like, the kitchen cupboard.
It's not
for some
sitting
reason.
It's not on the counter.
You got to find it. It's a nice surprise.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, in order to properly dissect and review this movie with a modern eye, we must first discuss it with pure nostalgia. AJ, start with you. Tell us the first time you saw it, what you thought about this movie, what your nostalgic rating was.
I can't tell you like about the first time specifically, only because I've watched it way too many times.
Yeah.
like I can't pinpoint when I watched this the first time. And back then, you just watch so many things, so many like jerk jokes and just like dick jokes and like all these things like just go over your head.
Yeah.
Because it was Mike Myers and Dana Carvey.
And they were just funny guys.
They're just, oh, these guys are just wacky. Wow. Yeah. Ooh, okay. And but
I can't wait to be 16.
Yeah.
Don't you ever say that.
This was like the first time I really ever saw Mike Myers, so this is what I thought he looked like.
Yeah, it's like, that's a really good point.
It's
man.
Like it was like the first time I ever thought or I ever saw Will Ferrell was an Anchorman. So it was weird to see him without a mustache and like that face. So I was just like, okay, this is Mike Myers. This is Dana Carvey. This is just who these people are.
Yeah,
and I loved it. I thought it was funny. I laughed because all my family was laughing. I laughed because my friends were laughing. I really enjoyed this movie. I am just going to give this a nice solid 8.5.
Nice. 8.5, Rashawn, what about you, man?
Yeah, kind of the same, honestly. I kind of can't even tell you the first time I watched it just because we watched it so many times, like AJ said, and what I can say is that every time we put it on, we watched the whole thing. You know, like it was a commitment to like watch this movie because it's so damn good. So I'm just gonna say, back then I'd probably give it like a 7.5.
7.5. See, again, because I am a little bit older than you guys. I actually was a Saturday Night Live watcher at the time, which was a big deal culturally. And so I knew Mike Myers already, and I actually saw the skits that they did prior to making this movie. So like, this was definitely a big deal for me because we thought it was funny on Saturday Night Live. I mean, you've got hilarious jokes, awesome quotes, super cool guys, awesome music.
Yeah.
This was definitely a big deal. I mean, I was 10 years old. I was looking for like something, you know, some identity. And it's like, oh, cool. This is like what friendship is and what life is. So, I mean, it was not one of my favorites, but it was definitely an important movie. So I'd say 7.5, nostalgic for me.
Right on.
Executive producer for today, Tyler Dark. Here's what he had to say. I'll have to say I was a bit young when I first watched this one, probably 10 to 13 years old. So a lot of the references went over my head. Physical comedy-wise, this is a classic. Wayne and Garth have tons of on-screen presence. Wayne is big, bombastic. Garth was the crazy little weirdo that... Those guys drew younger me's attention like a magnet at the time. I was also a huge fan of Austin Powers, so Mike Myers was already near and dear to my heart. Before this review, I hadn't watched this movie for years, and I still remembered that. I still remembered the selling out scene. Nostalgic review for this one, my guys, is going to have to be a solid 7 out of 10.
Nice.
We'll see you in the super happy ending. He actually wrote doodle. I don't know how you think it's spelled, but that's how it's spelled.
He took most of the time on trying to word that.
I like probably.
Exactly.
I respect it.
Thanks, Tyler.
So nostalgically, as a group, we are 7.63, which, if you'd like to know, in our giant rankings of all the movie we've done, that is slightly better than Encino Man, slightly worse than Big Lebowski. Nostalgic rating.
Wow.
It seems to fit right there in that nice little comforting, good movie. We really like it, but it's not our favorite.
Yeah, I like it there. That's fun.
Feels good, right?
Yeah.
Well, friends, listen up. Before we move on to Sean's informational details segment, I'm going to give you some details about our sponsor, Felix Gray Glasses.
Oh, yeah.
In case you don't know what they are, they make blue light filtering glasses that filter out all the harmful blue light that hits our eyeballs constantly all day long. These aren't funny looking glasses like your Zach Galifianakis blue blockers. These are completely normal looking, stylish, comfortable glasses that protect our eyes from the damaging effects of blue light, which emanates from computer screens, phones, TV, probably just from the world now. It's probably just like in the world, and it's just like, yeah, just right in your eyeballs.
It's just ambient light from all the cities.
it is. It's no secret. We love these glasses, and we each have multiple pairs, so it shouldn't come as a surprise to know that we're happy to give you some guidance if you're thinking about buying a pair. A friend of the podcast, Derek, messaged me a few weeks ago and said that he was thinking about buying a pair of Felix Gray glasses instead of a pair from his eye doctor. So I told him that, like, obviously I threw away my eye doctor glasses. I just tossed them in the garbage once I got my Felix Grays. That's how I knew how awesome they were. And it sounds like he pulled the trigger, so I'm excited to hear how much he likes them.
Awesome.
If you guys got any thoughts or questions about what pairs we wear, shoot us a message. We're happy to help.
Definitely.
These Felix Gray glasses are stylish, affordable, and they look like normal eyewear. People wouldn't even know you're wearing special filtering glasses, but you'll be glad you didn't when you realize all the negative effects that blue light has on you. Don't be afraid to reach out. We will tell you the truth. Non-prescription, prescription available. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/confused. That's felixgrayglasses.com/confused. Free shipping, free returns, free exchanges. See the future.
See the future.
Felix Gray, don't be a nerd. Look for the bird.
Yeah.
How about
one
that
of these days, man?
Get at us, Felix.
About it. Huh?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Gray.
I can keep going.
I'd go all day.
All right, Sean, let's move on to this. Get all the pertinent, important details of this movie for us. What do you got, man?
You got it. Produced by Lorne Michaels and Hawk Cock. Written by Mike
Look
Myers.
For the bird.
Wait, what?
Hawk.
Mike Hawk?
Hawk Coach. Mike Hawk. I don't know.
It's just. Yo, please keep going.
Yeah, please.
Written by Mike Myers and Bonnie and Terry Turner. Cinematography by Theo Van de Sande. Edited by Malcolm Campbell. Directed by Penelope Spheris. Cast: Mike Myers, Dana Carvey, Rob Lowe, Tia Carrera, Brian Doyle Murray, Lara Flynn Boyle, Michael DeLuis, Lee Turgeson, Kurt Fuller, Robert Patrick, Meatloaf, and Chris Farley. The character of Wayne was originally created by Mike Myers for Second City. When Myers was cast in SNL, he brought the character with him, but Mike Myers wasn't very well known, so Dana Carvey was added as Garth to give more dynamics to the bit. He originally didn't want another.
It was supposed to be a solo film.
Supposed
right?
to be a solo kind of character that he did, and Lorne Michaels was like, "Well, you're not well known, so we got to get like another cast right. member to join you."
And Dana Carvey was huge.
Technically, he was a bigger star yes. when he came on board.
Huge at the time.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Dana Carvey show? It lasted a season. Did you ever see it?
I think I saw parts of it.
There's only one really funny bit. They drove to like a fast food drive through, and they're like snickering in the car. She goes, "How can we take your order?" And they order like $300 worth of food, and they're like, and they pull forward, and she goes, "It'll be $317," and they pay her. And then right before she turns around with their food, they're like, "Go, go, go, go!" And they leave. That's the joke. That was the funny bit. And then I don't think anything else is funny.
That was the one standout bit.
It was the one standout bit that me and my dad laughed at.
After the success of the Blues Brothers, Lorne Michaels got the green light for our second SNL sketch-based film, and that being Wayne's World. So the success of Blues Brothers, the first SNL movie spinoff, that was in like the 80s.
Yeah, I think it was 80.
Yeah.
And then this 10, 12 years later yeah. was the second
to
one.
To use Sean's phrase, we will be covering that movie.
Oh, yeah.
We
will.
I like how he always goes, will.
We will.
And then people are still like, well, you said you would.
Yeah.
Penelope Spheeris was hired to direct after Lorne Michaels had seen her amazing documentaries, The Decline of Western Civilization. Have you guys seen any
no.
of those?
Mm-mm.
She has one about punk music in the like late 70s, early 80s, I believe.
Damn.
Where she just follows these musicians around, excuse me, and sorry.
Wow.
You know the rule. Your phone goes off, take a shot of Cedar Ridge.
Oh, shot. No.
No, don't.
I'll take a sip.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
And then she made another one in the 80s based off of like all the 80s music, and there's a famous scene from one of those documentaries where she's filming someone in a pool. I forget what band he's in, maybe like Warrant or something like that. He is just chugging a bottle of vodka, and he says, "I'll drink myself to death. I don't care." And his mom is right on the edge of the pool just watching all of this. It's nuts.
Whoa.
But it's really good.
What's it called again?
The Decline of Western Civilization.
I'm in.
Spheeris was struggling at the time as a director, directing mostly alien documentaries, and she said that getting Wayne's World flipped her career around in the best way possible. I love all of her movies, pretty much. She did Suburbia. It was her first movie.
I just watched that again the other day.
It's great.
That's a pretty hilariously intense,
it is.
Sad movie.
Yeah. Wayne's World was released on February 14th, 1992, with a budget of $20 million. The film was a massive success. As the 10th highest grossing film in 1992, Wayne's World made $183.1 million at the box office.
And immediately spawned a sequel. Absolutely. Like within like 12 months, they were like, here's the sequel.
Yeah. It was fast. It was fast. And it was a decent sequel, though,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. I imagine once they doubled their money at what they spent on the movie, they like,
said,
okay, yep.
go ahead, just write it.
Yeah.
Let's bring Chris Farley back.
Do the same movie.
Hurry.
Well, before we get in the next segment, don't forget your tasks for being a Confused Breakfast lover. Leave us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. Sign up on Patreon. There's like 50 hours of upcoming like weekly bonus audio that you can go back and get. Patreon.com/Confused Breakfast. Check us out on YouTube. Buy some merch. You know?
Do
check
that.
Out our social media accounts. We're currently being shadow banned on TikTok, so maybe you can go check it out. And
that's fun.
Figure out how to get us more views on there.
That'd be great.
We come didn't on over do anything
to,
wrong.
Come on over to Instagram because they don't care.
Instagram is the way. Join us on all that. Check the show notes. Go to confusedbreakfast.com. And up next, AJ Vince is going to do some research and tell us the ratings and reviews of critics and fans alike.
We are here and ready for the countdown. Well, we just did it. For the tomato meter!
Yeah! I almost forgot.
Fresh.
Nice.
Certified.
Was that pulling
fresh.
The splat that's back?
You're pulling the splat back?
It's the reverse snare. 79%.
Nice.
Certified fresh. I think that's like as close as you can get. It's like, yeah, that's a C+. We'll give them the certified.
Yeah. You made it.
Yeah.
That is fine. That is tied with GoldenEye as far as the critics
oh, really?
Are concerned. Wow. Same movie.
They're basically the same movie.
Same movie as far as the critics are concerned.
It's basically Encino Man. Audiences agreed a little bit more positive, I guess. 84%.
Okay.
And IMDb is 7.
Just plain old 7.
7.0.
That's our second 7 in a row. Happy Gilmore was also a 7, which was also Monster Squad, Cool Runnings, Uncle Buck, Bill and Ted.
Any
all
movie.
Sevens.
Any movie starts out at 7.
7. It's just, are you better or worse?
Hey, here's this. Enjoy it. Okay. well, let's start at the bottom. We'll work our way up, okay?
Hell yeah.
The Globe and Mail, Jay Scott had said, it gave it a 25 out of 100. Wayne's World has been engineered to amuse people who are mere images of its heroes, but it goes wickedly wrong. It's so dumb, it talks down to the stupid.
Harsh,
Jay Scott.
Wait, I'm stupid.
Wait a second.
I take offense
I
to
like
that.
This movie.
I enjoy that. Is he calling me stupid? I don't know. Empire gave it 60 out of 100.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thanks to the engaging performances and a sharp script, the movie is essentially a series of 3-minute sketches filling 101 minutes that could be just the right choice for that Saturday night date. While Wayne speak will no doubt be quoted and become part of the English language.
Accurate,
yep.
And I believe it has.
Extremely accurate. Some things are so deeply ingrained that you even forgot they're from Wayne's World.
Get yep. the net.
Yeah.
I say it all the time.
I say it all the time. All right, The Hollywood Reporter. This is, I believe this is one of the higher ones, actually. They give it an 80. The plot is a bit light, even to be carried on Wayne and Garth's droopy shoulders. It's splendidly smart. Dumb stuff, but even demanding hypercharged viewers whose systems have been over-injected with junk food will be pleasantly stimulated by the screenwriter's series of kooky non-sequitur asides, sequiturs and side roads venture to Milwaukee. That was
hey,
really hard
hey,
to read.
Here's a review. It's a pretty good movie. I think you should maybe see it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you don't have to use all those words.
I know. It's like there's a lot here, and you
here's,
just...
Here's 90 hyperboles.
Yeah.
In 30 years, some guy on a stupid podcast is yeah. trying to read this. Yeah.
I'll get him.
Some stupid guy who's slightly hungover.
Stop using non sequiturs to describe non sequiturs. This is horseshit.
Sometimes we're hungover when we do this, yeah. guys.
Sorry, get the shakes.
No, straight up.
Can't read his phone. Wayne.
Wayne. Not.
I'm having a good time.
Let's get some positives going here. 10 out of 10 from these watchers. Cricket Bat said that this is a time capsule of the early 90s.
Yep.
Wayne's World is essentially a time capsule of the early 90s. It's amazing how much influence this movie had on music, on comedy, and on pop culture in general. Unlike many other SNL sketches, this is one that actually works on the big screen. This movie is random, it's ridiculous, and it's hilarious.
Mm.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love it when they, like, I just picture they write their whole thing out and they go, and now for the title, what's my best line in here? That's my best line. That's the title.
The first thing I say.
The first thing I said.
I'm gonna call my review. This movie is Wayne's World, and this is what I thought about it. This movie is Wayne's World. This is what I
there was one on here that was just it was just called. I should have taken this one down, but it just said my notes, and it just he was just like, this is not a very good movie. it was like 2 sentences. Oh,
wait,
long.
So my note?
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, like, oh, here I found it. I'm gonna read this one. It's a 3 out of 10. My notes: some funny parts, but not a lot, and some is just awful. Dana Carvey made me laugh 0. Mike Myers is funny, but this movie sucked overall. One viewing.
I like to think that he took like notes on his note thing from his phone and just copied and pasted them on the website.
Yeah.
My notes. In 1996. I forgot to take that out.
Damn it.
Let's go back to another positive.
Buy eggs.
Buy eggs. Damn it. Right next to buy eggs. My Wayne's World notes.
It's going to rain tomorrow. Mow the lawn.
This is Manhattan 3198 said best comedy movie of the 1990s. Mike Myers and Dana Carvey. The 1990s, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi.
Whoa.
But better.
Whoa.
I know.
Dang.
Together, these two work, but spectated from each other, they are separated. Must mean separated, guys. Together, these two work, but separated from each other, they are terrible. Best comedy and freshest, most original idea for a movie since the 1984 Ghostbusters movie.
Wow.
Yeah, because Michael Myers definitely had zero success moving forward without Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
I don't think anything really tough happened.
On him. I can't think of three movies in a series that were pretty successful.
Neither can I.
No problem. We're good.
I'm going to give you guys one more here, and then we'll get done with it. One of the most overrated movies I've ever seen, 1 out of 10, D Jersey Guy. This movie was made before Mike Myers knew how to be funny. His comic chops were not at the standard that we are accustomed to. When originally made, this movie was 45 minutes long. I can see why. There's just not much of a redeeming factor while watching this movie. I felt like I wasted an hour and a half. Dana Carvey, in my estimation, is not and has never been very funny. His brand of comedy may have worked years ago, but it does nothing but put a damper on an already awful movie. For those of you who wasted $8 or $9 to go see this movie, I'm truly sorry. For those of you who buy this movie, I truly feel sorry for you. And for the actors who made this movie.
And for the people that don't like joy, I hate
I'm sorry.
He sees Wayne's World on someone's shelf, the home he goes to, and he's just like, oh, I'm going to pray for you tonight.
Oh, no.
I feel so bad for you.
You're in my T's and P's. Sorry about that.
Why do you feel bad for me?
T's and P's, baby.
Well, we are seconds away from reviewing this classic movie scene by scene with a modern eye, but first I want to tell you about our favorite way to watch movies. This is my particular way, these nostalgic movies from my past. I grab my notebook, my pen, I sit on my comfy couch, my cat, Sergeant Meowenstein, instinctively crawls into my lap. I grab a glass of Cedar Ridge whiskey with some delicious Cedar Ridge in there. It is the absolute perfect way to relax my mind, erase the stresses of life, and allow me to focus on the movie without distraction. Many times I choose to use their incredible flagship bourbon, which was just named the number one selling bourbon in the state of Iowa for the second year in a row.
Wait, what?
And I make an old fashioned with it. That's how I use that. I mean, it's literally perfect for a craft cocktail. Sometimes I prefer the quintessential American single malt, just neat in a fancy glass. Just let it go. It gives you that scotch vibe without the feeling that I sat around a bonfire for 7 hours and just directly breathed in bonfire smoke. Yeah.
That, like, it doesn't feel like you threw a box of Band-Aids into the fire.
And then just breathe them in. Yeah, so it's the scotch vibe without that.
Right.
Which is why it's so good. Other times I take a bottle of the number 9, the collaboration with Slipknot. I pour it over a single large cube and I let it marinate. The ice slowly turns into water and meshes perfectly with the rye bourbon blend. If you're a whiskey drinker or have someone in your life who is, please stop by your local liquor store and pick up a bottle. If you don't have it available in your area, you can get it online and have it shipped directly to your door. We promise that it's amazing, and we know you all love it. These guys are in our backyard. They're quickly becoming one of the best whiskey distilleries in the entire galaxy. For more information and ordering links, go to CedarRidgeWhiskey.com. The link is also available at ConfusedBreakfast.com. And in the episode notes, CedarRidgeWhiskey.com. You won't be disappointed with this decision. Please drink responsibly.
CedarRidgeWhiskey.com.
CedarRidgeWhiskey.com.
Well, boys, what do you say? We head to our parents' basement with our friends and nail another episode of our cable access show before we pile into a car, head out on the town to bask in the glow of our local stardom. Hopefully, we'll find some cool rock bands and some fine rocker chicks. Game on!
Game on!
Game on!
Game on!
Here we go.
Here we go.
So, in Aurora, Illinois, Wayne Campbell and Garth Algar host a public access television show called Wayne's World. A broadcast of their show catches the attention of television producer Benjamin Kane. While out cruising with his friends in Garth's car, Wayne stops to admire a 1964 Fender Stratocaster in a shop window. Later in the evening, they go to a nightclub. Avoiding his ex-girlfriend, he falls in love with local rocker Cassandra Wong.
Mm-hmm.
Can I bring up one thing?
Yes.
Is essentially what they're doing, this local access cable show, is this essentially a prediction of podcasts?
I was like, there's so many similarities.
Oh, my God.
to like what we're doing and what we're going through, like with the sponsors and shit coming up later.
Yeah.
It's basically like every podcast in America is in their parents' basement. Yeah. They've got friends helping out. We don't know if anyone's watching or listening. Yeah. We're just kind of like, I don't know. This is pretty fun, right?
Yeah. It's just, okay, we're doing it. We got a kick. I've got a kick-ass public access TV show. It is, man. I felt like I was watching a documentary on what we do.
Yeah,
like to it some degree.
It's kind of true.
Yeah,
and for those who like, some of you may not remember, but I mean, in the 80s, like early 90s, there was like local cable was a big deal. And they would have the ability to do these local cable access shows where you could reach just a small population of your town, and it would be late at night. And so we're assuming this is like 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. They have this little 15-minute spot or something like that.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't – I mean, they wouldn't like do it from their basement. It would be at a studio somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how they like would broadcast that or – maybe they pre-record it and send it in. I don't know.
I don't know. It
gave me some podcast vibes for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
I remember, I think he was out of Chicago, but you could get it in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to Sven Gulli.
Yeah.
He just like hosted horror movies, you know.
That was like a local cable thing?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's like out of Chicago or something like that, but he's obviously gotten a little bit bigger and reached out to a little bit more people. But yeah, I like that vibe a lot.
It's awesome.
It's really cool. I like Rob Lowe. Just like got done banging a chick or something like that. She's like, we haven't been to Shakey's in so long. I'm like, is that what you call it? Is that what
well,
you're
Well, so is she, do you remember Shakey's? It's like, it was like a restaurant.
I don't remember it.
It was, I think it was like a chain restaurant back then. And there's a outfit in the corner that looks like a Shakey's restaurant outfit.
Oh.
So like,
are you serious?
Was this just a waitress?
That makes total sense, yeah. I think so.
It just,
big yikes.
I mean, I got more to talk about Benjamin Kane later, but yeah, I noticed that this time around. I'm like, was that just a waitress at Shakey's?
Yeah.
Because you can see it in the corner. There's an outfit just kind of like right there. There's a little hat.
Just chilling.
And stripe.
Good job.
Just chilling, man.
I didn't recognize that. I just think it's very funny that they are just laying in bed and just flipping through channels. Like, is there like, is it that boring?
That's
there?
That's what it was, man.
Like, I just think that maybe he is just like the most boring guy actually ever, that they just got to revert to television, to a public access TV show.
Maybe they tried and he couldn't get it up.
Oh no.
And so he's like, I got to watch a little TV before. And then once he got an idea, he's like, oh, I got a boner now. And then
once he got a money-making scheme, he's like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what gets him going.
How do you guys think Suck Cut would fare on Shark Tank?
Oh, yeah. As you can see, it sucks. Well, it cuts.
It sure does suck.
Get a load of this guy, Cam. I think those sweep-ins or those overlays are like our soundbite buttons.
Yeah.
It's basically just like, get a load of this guy. No, it's like really well produced too. Like it's a show that I would watch.
Yeah. Oh yeah, just two dudes fucking around.
I would totally watch that. It's hard to determine, like, I guess they are popular, right? Because they go out on the town and people are like, yeah.
Which is not reflective of podcasts.
Which is very not reflective of podcasts.
We go out, no one knows.
We have faces for podcasting. Yeah. So that's what we get to deal with. I love his intro as he's like introducing everything. And like, and one of my favorite things that makes me laugh for probably no reason at all is when he walks into his kitchen and he says, I live in Aurora, Illinois. It's like, this is kitchen, like, okay. Like, it's not like like later on when they're standing in front of pictures of cities. Yeah. He's just in his kitchen, Aurora, Illinois.
It's such a great voice too, because like I did hear some old, he apparently worked this character out on like Second City, I guess. And it was very Canadian. It was a Canadian Wayne Campbell.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it had that accent. I think Wayne is Canadian. Mike Myers.
Mike Myers is Canadian. Yeah.
But so he changed that to Chicago, but it's weird how his voice changed. It's like he's always got like a sinus infection kind of. He's like, ugh. You know, like, I'm not good at impersonations. Yeah.
One more
like,
time. Do that one more time.
Hi, hi. But like, it's amazing how he talks the way he does. Because if you really break down that voice, like, can you even do his voice? It's kind of a weird impression, you know?
It is a weird one. It's,
it just sounds like he's always kind of stuffed up.
He does have like a Chicagoan twang to it.
Yeah.
Like he does, you know, Chicago, you know, that kind of Midwestern twang, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, would be hard to do if, you know, you're from a different country and you say a boot.
Yeah.
You
know? A boot.
Garth. marriage is punishment for shoplifting in some countries. It's just like
he's very relaxing. How his cadence is like super relaxing to me. That he makes me feel immediately welcome, like in the group. The way he's just like, "Cha, it's cool, man. It's very it's very cool, dude."
Well, I know they shot this movie pretty much in LA mostly, like all the exteriors and some of the like interiors and stuff. I think they shot only 2 days in actual Aurora, Illinois.
Really?
Yeah. Mike Myers in Canada like grew up like 20 kilometers from Aurora, Canada, or like
Aurora, Ontario, or something like that.
And so it was just kind of weird.
We're just gonna make that.
He heard the name Aurora again and decided that's where I want it to be based because he liked the way it sounded.
It makes complete sense though. It feels right. It feels like the right choice.
Yeah.
Because you're like it's like when I used to go to the University of Iowa and people were like, "I'm from Chicago," and I'd be like, "Well, no, but where are you really from?" Well, Aurora, which is 45 minutes away from downtown Chicago. You know, like it's the perfect setting for him to just be like, "Well, I'm just a yuppie from the suburbs, but I can get into downtown if I need to."
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Another great reference I love is I've had plenty of Joe jobs. I love I've used that a couple of times, and then it's just like it's my Joe job, like a
couple of Joe jobs.
I have an extensive collection of name tags and hairnets.
I would love to do Wayne's World for a living someday. And it's like same here,
same here, dude.
Yeah,
as if,
and monkeys might fly out of my butt.
So. Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
A little tidbit on this. They originally wanted a Guns N' Roses song.
Which would have been such a terrible idea.
So I don't like Guns N' Roses first off, but...
And it, at that time, it would have been like a current Guns N' Roses hit.
Yeah, like off of Chinese Democracy.
It would have been like Sweet Child of Mine or something.
But having Bohemian Rhapsody, I think as Mike Myers fought for Bohemian, he's like, "I'll quit if we don't have this song like in this scene." And so there it was. But apparently, Mike Myers was kind of fucking hard to work with on this movie.
He was a creative diva.
Yeah.
You know,
like he didn't get the right cream in his coffee one day and like fucking flipped out. Or in that particular scene, he was like, "Why are we shooting this so many times? Why do we have to bang our heads?" It's like, come on, dude, we're filming a fucking movie. Like, this is your movie.
Well, it's weird that it's like he sensed how important that scene was going to be.
Yeah.
But then he like didn't want to go all the way.
Yeah, and it's like the most iconic scene in this movie.
The weird thing about Bohemian Rhapsody is if you think about it, it was like almost 20 years old at that point. And it wasn't like what we think of Bohemian Rhapsody today. It wasn't this just like, "Oh, the best song in the world that everyone knows." It really wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
And so it was a weird choice to put into this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I can see why Lauren was like, "No, put in the hot new 90s Guns N' Roses song. Axl Rose is so cool."
Yeah.
You know, like, let's do that. But that was the most epic choice of all time because that scene single-handedly became like one of the most iconic scenes ever and instantly revitalized. It's like the TV show effect now. It's the Yellowstone effect. It's the what just happened with Stranger Things. It's that moment, but a slower burn, you know, where it takes an old song and goes, instant revitalization.
Right. Yeah.
And it was amazing. Unfortunately, Freddie Mercury knew about it, but didn't get to see it happen. He had just passed.
So I read something that might be true, because I think I read both where he did see just that scene like right before he died and he laughed his ass off.
He saw it, but he didn't get to see how it revitalized.
Not the whole movie.
The whole movement of how it revitalized that song.
Right.
But that song is, this might be one of the most iconic music moments of any movie ever.
I'd say probably top three.
It has to
100%.
And if you want to overthink it, you know, these guys are musicians. You know, it's weird. They're like musicians, but then they went on to do a show.
They gave up their music dreams to do some sort of other art.
Other art outlet.
Art form?
You know.
Yeah, whatever.
Medium. but I think if you really think about it, it almost shows like an appreciation, like this music appreciation that they have that's deeper than just rock, you know, metal.
Yeah.
Oh, we listen to metal. It's like, no, all these dudes definitely look like metal guys, like 80s metal guys, but at the same time, they're listening to Queen, you know, that like Bohemian Rhapsody and starting it at that part of the song and appreciating it.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that so much.
The movie
about
takes its
characters.
Time to like pretty much do the whole song.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot about it. So you're just watching dudes love a song.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fun. Right. I think it's kind of beautiful that Freddie Mercury did see it.
Yeah.
And
it feels good.
And he's like, yeah, I like it. You can go ahead and do it. And it's like one of the last things that he did before he died. And it's like, that's so cool.
Well, because I think that they couldn't, I think they had issues even securing a Guns N' Roses song because Guns N' Roses is like, give me $40 million.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
We're going to be in Terminator 2.
Yeah,
it's fine.
It's going to be awesome. So knowing that, Freddie and everybody was just like, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
It's cool.
My favorite part of that scene, though, is not the like the headbanging. It's when Garth, when nothing really matters. He goes, he doesn't know the words. But so, like, I thought that was a creative writing choice. Nope. But apparently he just didn't know the words. And they were, and he was like really upset, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was like, I wish I could fucking take that. He had to learn the lyrics on the day, and he just couldn't. And so, like, after the movie came out and everything, he's like, God, I look so fucking dumb.
But that, like, he shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah.
Because it was like, no, that's what they wanted my character to be.
It works for him. You know, like, we wouldn't have thought any different of it.
If I had not read up on that, I would have been like, that was, Dana Carvey's a genius.
Yeah.
Dana Carvey's a genius.
In that vein, too, like, when Dana Carvey first got to be Garth, like in the sketches and everything like that, Mike Myers told him that Garth is essentially like a lover of Wayne. Like, he will do anything. He worships Wayne.
Wasn't that all he gave him?
Yeah, that's about it.
He's like, hi, Mike. I'm Dana Carvey. Nice to meet you. Hi, nice to meet you. I'd like some notes on what this character is. You love me.
You love me. You worship
me. That's it.
You try and get your hair like me, you know.
I don't like that.
Yeah, but it kind of like it works for like that where he's just like, he's not really a
he doesn't actually like the
like
song.
He's not like an actual fan of anything really. He just likes it because Wayne likes it. <you
know>? That's a good point.
Side job.
Yeah.
So classic. I think they roll into the diner, Makita's Donuts.
So yes. Cool.
I hated Ed O'Neill as a kid. I don't know why. I didn't like I didn't like Married with Children as a kid because I didn't understand it. So like it was just his character in this movie was so weird to me.
Yeah.
And I still have trouble being like, what is this guy doing in this movie? What is the point of this?
I agree. I think he was just like in the sketches on SNL and they just had him in the movie. And I think
can't remember.
I don't know if he like just like created, he's like, I want to do this character where I'm unhinged and I'm about to snap at all moments.
Nobody talks to the camera but us.
What are you doing? I had never done a crazy thing in my life until that night.
One of my favorite things is right after that, Garth's like, hi. Or he's like, hi, I'm Garth too. He's like, oh, what's that?
It's like he wanted his screen time, but then he didn't think anything to say.
He's like, I don't really have anything to say. What's that?
And then we get our introduction of Laura Flynn Boyle.
Crack one open.
The gun rack scene, I didn't understand at all. Like, I'm just like, I don't understand.
I didn't either.
Well, what's a gun rack, and like, what does this have to do with anything? But that, I mean, this is definitely one of the more iconic quotes of the movie, I think.
God, it's amazing. Number one, when I was a kid, I always wondered, why are they being so mean to that girl?
Yeah.
Like, she seems kind of nice.
She's a psycho hose beast.
I don't know. She's not a psycho hose beast. Uh-oh. Don't make eye contact. psycho hose beast.
She kind of flip trips on her heels as she walks over.
She is an amazing presence in this movie. And like that quote is just like, I got you a present. It's like, I got you a present. If it's a severed head, I'm really very upset.
He's clearly been like being mean to her for weeks and she's not taking the hit.
No,
it's a very squeak in basketball moment when she's like, if you're not careful, you're gonna lose me. It's like it's like if you say that 13 or 14 more times, I'm very upset.
I'm out of here.
Apparently that was kind of inspired by a real life girlfriend of Mike Myers.
No.
And like she bought him a gun rack in real life and he's like, what am I gonna do with this? And when the movie came out, she saw it and like called him up and was like, that's fucked up. Like, I'm a psycho hose beast to you. And so he like eventually kind of apologized. And I think he'd like in
and then he married her?
In Austin Powers or something like that, like he dedicated a character to her or something like that. Like he felt kind of bad like besmirching her character in the movie.
It's a movie. We're not our personas on this podcast.
No, not at all.
Everything we say is just made up.
I don't drink unless I'm here.
That's right.
I don't actually like the Philadelphia Flyers.
No, not at all, because they suck.
This is just a character. Ooh,
here's a prop.
A Stan Makita's Cafe Donut Shop mug. That's mine.
Nice.
I bet we can find that on Redbubble.
I bet you can find that too. It's not really like an outstanding one, but that would be a cool relic from this movie for me.
Oh my God.
Do you got one, AJ?
I don't have one.
I had a tough time on this one because like there were some obvious ones, but I kind of wanted something unique. I settled on at the very end of the movie, the Noah's Arcade presents Wayne's World neon sign.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I'm collecting through our props in this movie. I'm collecting some signs. So I feel like that's the sign I want.
Yeah.
Could you imagine like if we could actually get all these,
if whatever we actually said we wanted
there's just a room of this that's from that would be so fucking
cool. Open up a room like he opens up like to the guys like training like James Bond.
Somebody's gonna NFT us and we can get you those things.
Yeah, exactly. Just
originally I was thinking that I just want the like skating Stan Makita thing on top of that building.
That's pretty awesome.
However, I am going to take
his hat.
Garth's belt.
Garth's nice. Belt. Yeah. That actually works.
Fucking dope thing.
Hell yeah.
That'd be cool, man.
So that Stan Makita's, I wish it existed.
I know.
Like, it'd be so cool. But apparently it was a Tim Hortons instead.
Yeah.
Like,
which is weird that they're just like, we're just going to change the name.
It's Chicago, so Stan Makita.
Stan Makita. He's a legend.
I got a few things that he could do with that gun rack, to be honest.
Okay.
Let me find it here.
Even own a gun.
You could put your hockey sticks on it.
Cool.
It would hold your hockey sticks.
Good point.
You could wrap all your podcasts, show your public access cables onto it.
Oh.
You could. That's about it, actually.
No, that's pretty much all we got.
I think that's it. Yeah. There's not much you could do with
it. I don't even own a gun, let alone many guns to necessitate an entire rack. What am I going to do with a gun rack?
So they go down. I totally forgot Meatloaf was in this movie. R.I.P. Meatloaf, man.
His name is Robert Paulson.
Tiny the Bouncer?
Yeah, Tiny the Bouncer.
That's one of my favorite fucking lines of the movie when he's like, who's playing tonight? We got the Jolly Green Giants and the Shitty Beatles.
And the Shitty Beatles.
Are they any good?
No, they suck. They suck. So it's not just a clever name.
That's fucking, I love that. Because that is like every conversation I've ever had with a door guy at a local band concert.
Yes.
Who's playing tonight? Rattles off a bunch of names I've never heard. Are they any good? No, they fucking suck.
No, they suck.
Give me your $10.
I watched this movie like three times for this show, and I always feel bad that they didn't. Like
they never give him a high five.
Like, party on.
He's like,
and they don't do it. I feel so bad for him.
But it doesn't trip him up. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, Tiny's doing fine,
he's
man.
He's just like, hey, Wayne. And like Garth really just stiffs him like real hard. He's just like,
he just walks by. Hey, he's a bat out of hell, dude. He ain't got, man.
You
need a high five from a public access show.
Well, what year was actually Bad Out of Hell, that album?
I think that was about 80.
Late 80s? Okay, yeah. So Meatloaf was, okay.
I think it was one of his first movies, I think, right?
Definitely. I mean,
it was really
he wasn't
small.
In a ton of them, but I wrote this down because I didn't do any research, as always. We're watching Crucial Taunt, right?
Yeah.
And we're seeing Tia Carrera,
yes.
Cassandra.
Yes.
And I'm like, I wrote this down. Basically, is this the best lip-syncing performance ever? I fully believe that Tia Carrera's character is singing this song.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on to my research. I was like, oh, she did sing that song.
Yep. She is singing it.
That's why. Okay. That's mind-blowing.
She makes it look really good.
Yes. Like, it sounds great, yeah. And she fucking nails it. I believe her fully that she is Cassandra, mm-hmm. and she is a rock star.
Aren't some of her songs like on the soundtrack, yeah. too?
Why You Want to Break My Heart?
It's a good song.
Yeah.
I like it.
And the Ballroom Blitz.
Yeah.
The
Ballroom Blitz.
Which
version.
Is, oh cool. You're a cover band. Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yep.
Crucial Taunt.
I can do without it.
With the cover?
Yeah. No, I like it. Like, she does sound really good. And, like, all the instrument or, like, all the band members,
they look great.
They look like they're doing what they're actually doing. And I
yeah.
hate that in movies and shows where.
When they don't sync.
Well, then they don't sync it up or, like, they hit, like, a crash and they're still on the hi hat. Yes. I hate it. But it worked well. In
they
this
all.
Movie.
I tried to look them all up.
For her.
What? With her bass playing. She,
well, dude, there was a few times where it kind of sold. Yeah. She sort of sold it, but a couple times where it's like, you're not playing the bass.
She's not playing that bass line. And she's like one place. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, she's just like on the bottom two strings.
Yeah, like, I get it, but at the same time, it's that, like, that's like the bass, one of the most crucial parts of that song.
The crucial taunt of the song.
The crucial taunt of that song.
Every movie we ever see a band, this is like 3 out of 5 where there's never a PA. There is no PA at this club.
Oh, they all have in-ears, man. It's fine.
It's all in-ears.
The whole crowd's it's a silent disco. Yeah, way cool.
Hey, dope.
I love it. There was another couple movies we've done where I'm like, come on, just set up a PA.
Just put some speakers
Go to
there.
An actual music venue and do this. Come on. But I feel for Wayne Campbell because there's been many times in my life where I've walked into a bar, a music club, and there's been a female rocker, and I've just been like, love you.
many times.
I love you. Like, I want to have your babies.
It's like, yes, she will be mine.
I'll take that.
Same thing. Like,
you
don't even hear the song that's playing. It's the Dreamweaver. Yeah. Dreamweaver. And she's like screaming, and you're like, Dreamweaver.
Yeah, there's. It's just like the confidence, like on the onstage confidence, and just like you that stage is yours. I'm like, oh, it's so hot. I love it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, are you not feeling it?
No, AJ. It's like I could. It's fine.
You don't like it?
It's fine. And just like it's cool.
You don't like Tia Carrera?
Oh, I think she's great.
You just don't think she's a good bass player.
Yeah, it's kind of upsetting, but yeah. You know. It's
like. Do you have a particular woman musician that happened to you on?
In real life, no, but there's, I forget her name, but she sings for The Kills. My mind is blown every time I see her, and I'm like, I want her so bad.
I walked into Gabe's Oasis in Iowa City once and saw Pretty Girls Make Graves. Andrea Zolo, the frontman, woman singer for that song. I was madly in love from that moment on. I didn't even hear their set. I was just hearing Dreamweaver.
And now you're like the one that got away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that insanely like overly loud top floor of Gabe's.
Yep. Yeah. She still have like I think I sent her a friend request on Facebook like 15 years ago and I think it's still pending.
Still waiting for that one.
Why so aggressive during Jimi Hendrix? Like, there's pits and fights, and bullies. Like, why are you doing that with Jimi Hendrix? I get pumped up with Light My Fire, but
was this song still going on when Garth went and got his belt on, and then he came back, and it was like still going on? I was like, wow, that's a long version. So this would be the long cut. This is the jam version. Okay, great. Yeah, love this part. I thought this is the coolest thing as a kid. Was that stun belt.
It's basically like Data from the Goonies, right?
It basically is, yeah.
He like puts that, like, looks like a tuning fork on like steroids that he put in there. And he like kind of parks up behind him. He's like, excuse me.
And let's get by now.
What do you want, your little worm? It's
like, I hate that.
If we were on a train to go punch a face, I'm on board.
That's what I'm talking about. Are we finally in agreement?
Yeah.
Is that the most punchable face in this movie?
This was hard. like thinking about him, like I like even Rob Lowe, I like him a lot.
He's too pretty to punch.
It's got to be this motherfucker. I hate him.
It's him, man.
With Rob Lowe, I was like, I want to destroy something beautiful. Like Fight Club. But I think this is my guy. This is my most punchable face.
100%.
Absolutely. He deserved what he got. And like he's just standing there, just like, yeah.
Yeah, he's hearing Dreamweaver in his head.
Dude,
he's infatuated with Cassandra. This is the same, and he's just mad at Garth because he's interrupting it.
It'd be awesome if you looked over at someone like while you were at Gabe's and looked over while Dreamweaver was playing.
And they were doing it
and
too.
And it's like, oh, Dreamweaver. Oh, you got two. She's mine. One of my next pet peeves in movies while like the music's going on and like the audience is the extras in these scenes. They're always like,
yeah.
Or like one of them will be overreactive, and it's probably like the director being like, don't do that. Like watching Garth pull out the thing. She's like, oh.
Yeah.
And then it shocks me. She's like, oh. Yeah. Like, stop it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
First and last role ever.
Yeah.
See, if they properly did this movie for an original band concert, no one would be moving. They'd all just be going like this. Yeah. Arms crossed, just
most,
going.
Most of the guys would be in the back just like,
impress me. I don't know this song.
And then when the song ends, yeah, woo, woo. Yeah.
One guy.
this is normally what you hear. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah. We're gonna play Fire.
Well, let's move this on, boys.
Yeah, let's do
it. All right, so Benjamin meets Wayne and Garth to convince them to sell the rights to the show for $5,000 each. Later, Wayne returns to the music store and purchases a Stratocaster with the money. Benjamin attempts to steal Cassandra from Wayne using his wealth and good looks by distracting Wayne and Garth with all-access tickets to an Alice Cooper concert in Milwaukee while offering to produce a music video for Cassandra's band.
I forgot to say one thing while he's hitting on Cassandra, and he's like, hey, can I call you sometime? He says like two things to her, by the way, and that's confidence right there. But he's like, hey, can I call you sometime? She's like, you can come to my loft party or whatever. And he's like, I'll be there. Just one of my favorite moments is like he just looks at the camera and is like, I love it so much. Anyway, sorry.
So Benjamin comes down to meet them. He goes directly to their house. He finds out where they're doing it, and they're doing the show.
Yeah.
And he's holding like a Heather Locklear thing or something. And Garth says, I'm getting tired of holding this. And Wayne says, that's what she said.
Yeah. So, Claudia Schiffer. Sorry.
Claudia Schiffer, right. Yes. So he drops a that's what she said. My mind starts racing. I'm wondering, is this the first that's what she said ever?
That's what she said? Oh, my God.
So I did some research on this. So this was definitely revitalized by this movie. But the earliest version dates back to 1975. Chevy Chase on Weekend Update said that's what she said in 1975. But before that, it was a British thing. It was in the early 1900s. The joke was, as the actress says to the bishop, that was the same implication of that's what she said.
Huh.
As the actress says to the bishop, they were using that. A test reel for Alfred Hitchcock's Blackmail turned that phrase into as the girl said to the soldier. And here's where it gets crazy. AJ, I'm about to blow your mind, right? So in the current popularity of That's What She Said,
yeah.
Ricky Gervais started using as the actress said to the bishop in the British version of The Office, which then in the current Office, they then took that and said the That's What She Said. They started doing that.
Wow.
That's so amazing.
Brilliant.
Isn't that insane?
It's my favorite thing ever right now.
Because AJ does have another podcast.
Yes, I do.
It's all about The Office called Scotch and Splenda.
Scotch and Splenda.
AJ knows more about The Office than you do.
Anybody. I'm telling you.
It's weird, but yeah.
Did you know that at all?
I didn't realize that was like the origin of it, but like when you got onto the train of like a British thing, I was like,
what's
you're
going to
bring Ricky Gervais into this, I'm going to lose my shit.
So awesome. So technically Chevy Chase is responsible for this, but Wayne's World was the reason it came back into pop culture.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just like Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's great.
What was the first one? It was an actress says to
it the... It says, as the actress says to the bishop.
I'm going
to
start saying that.
Be like, I'm getting tired of hold of this.
As the actress says to the bishop. Thanks, man.
Got him.
Oh, cheeky joke, chap.
Cheeky joke. How about that?
We got $5,000.
We got $5,000.
What would you?
It's the dance into that club.
It's a very Encino Man dance.
It is. It really is.
Basically,
What would you have bought with $5,000? Would you have bought a 64 Fender Stratocaster?
A brand new fence. That's what I need. And I'm
no.
I'm scrounging for it.
Actually, I'd like to ask you guys. So a 64 Strat, did you see how much money he gave? Like he pulled out the money when he bought it.
It was like all 20s, right?
A 64 Fender Strat, classic white, with single coil pickups and a whammy
and
ball.
And a whammy ball.
does anyone know how much cash he pulled out of his hands when he goes, $2,000 in 1992. Does anyone know what the current rate? I'm wondering if there's anyone in the room who knows anything about guitars. Producer Jeremy, what is the current rate for that guitar?
$27,000.
$27,000 is what that guitar would be worth today.
Holy shit.
So when your wife yells at you for buying a classic guitar, just be like, it's going to be worth more money.
It's going to be worth more money.
$19,000 to $77,000. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, that was the last good classic year of that guitar.
Yeah, oh yeah.
As a man who knows nothing about guitars, I got a bunch of in the room.
After the success of this movie, Fender made, like, they remade those guitars a little more cheaply, actually. But they had Wayne's World, like, on the back of it, I think. Or, like, on the neck, maybe on the head, I guess. And just for the success of this movie, they just re-released them.
Did they file down the nut and take the buzz out of the low E?
It's like, what are you talking about?
I love this woman.
How do you know it has a buzz? It's like this like, was that model, Jeremy, just notorious for a buzz in the low E?
That scene drives me fucking
Well, everything about this scene is like weird.
Whammy bar.
And a whammy bar. But then, like, the Stairway to Heaven thing is so weird to me.
Yeah, Jeremy worked at Guitar Center, right? Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a thing.
But the weird thing about it is then, like, they're buying into this joke of the, like, no, everyone plays Stairway to Heaven on the guitar. But they can't even fucking buy the rights to the song to actually play four notes of the riff.
Right, right. It wasn't anything of it.
I had never heard Stairway to Heaven when I saw this movie, so I was like,
what's the big deal about
that? And then when I finally heard Stairway to Heaven, I'm waiting for that riff. I'm
like, I know.
That riff never happens. What were they talking about?
They said that it showed up as the actual notes of the song, I believe, in a theatrical version of this movie.
Seriously? So maybe in the theaters?
Theaters, that's what it was. They had, like, they had two signs that said, one said no stairway, another one was like stairway
with a red circle.
And then they had the original like notes that he played, but then when they re-released the movie, they changed it in post and they changed it to four different notes.
Huh.
So that's what they did.
It's just stupid to me that you'd have to buy the rights to this fucking song for five notes.
Yep. Yeah.
Fuck you, Led Zeppelin. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
They're gods.
I didn't mean that. Sorry.
I like when Benjamin's talking to them. He's like, "Well, I told Mr. Vandenhoff, he's like, you guys aren't really interested in money." He's like, "No, we're not interested in money." I fucking love that.
And Benjamin just kind of just yucking it up. Is he a great salesman, Mike? Do you think?
I got weird things with Benjamin because like I don't think. Modern day look at this, like I don't think he's a big wig. Like I think he's just a lower peon. In fact, I think that whoever's place he takes them to, I don't think that's his place.
Oh yeah.
I think he was with why would he be with a Shakey's waitress?
Yeah.
In a weird looking apartment bedroom when he's this big wig with this most beautiful place in the world. Like I think it's weird this whole thing about Benjamin.
I think you're right. I think he's kind of struggling.
Yeah,
and he's just kind of a good swindler of people. Like the way he talks to like Vanderhoff, and
that's one of the big parts.
Yeah,
for me.
He's just like, because you're brilliant, you have great ideas, and like says it to his wife. You know, it's like, oh, that's because you're brilliant. You know, like, just talking people up so they say yes more.
He's doing
you know?
Anything he can to get this deal done.
Yeah. Flipping it around and saying, wait, so Mr. Vanderhoff, you're telling me that if you had a local spot, like on a TV show, that we could do this? And he says, well, yeah, that'd be good. He's like, I'm inspired.
Yeah.
He's just like,
you know, I know nothing about video games. I found what you just said fascinating.
Riveting. Zoltar, gelatinous cube, amazing.
Riveting. That's how we get sponsors too. Is like, I know nothing about hot sauces, but I found what they do fascinating.
It's delicious though.
Well, and it also doesn't make much sense. Like, even let's say he was like a big wig, what is he spending so much time on like a local cable access television show to basically just get the contract of an arcade?
Yeah, like for the advertising for a large arcade.
And he just gave them $10,000.
Yeah.
So that means he would have had to have somehow gotten $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 from Noah's Arcade or believe that this cable access show could actually then make more money in the future. Seems like a weird gamble overall.
It is a weird like thing. Like what's his payoff? You know, like you're saying, it's if he wants to exploit this, like because Garth reads it later, he's like Saturday, exploit public access TV show. I'd hate to be those guys. the whole point is like, oh yeah, I can sell this to Vanderhoff. He doesn't have the rights to the show. He wants the advertising from Noah's Arcade. But if Wayne's World, if they don't comply and they throw it, like, there's no show.
He can't keep the show without Wayne and Garth.
Yeah. Like,
so what's the point?
It just doesn't make much sense to me. I don't know. Going back to the meeting, and he says, and he's back to it, and he's back to his yuppie stuff. He's like, so I pop in one of the VHSs I have. Like I said, I'm a fan.
I'm a fan.
it's like, you douche. and then he's like, but he said, take these cashier's checks. Let them know that I'm serious. He's like, and these two cashier's checks for $5,000. He's like, and they're...
you guys aren't interested in money.
Excuse me?
I'll just burn these up right now.
A baking powder?
When he's buying that Strat, Dana Carvey on the drum set, actually playing drums.
You can, and it's not even that he like went in a studio and recorded the drums and then like faked it. The kick drum air is moving perfectly with his kick drum.
And you can see like he's playing. He has his Garth smirk. It kind of fades a little bit because he's like actually paying attention to what he's doing, you know?
Yeah.
I always thought that too. Like ever since I saw this movie, like that looks real. And it is. He did it
on Saturday Night Live too. Church Lady played drums.
Oh shit.
Like live on a sketch, and it was awesome. Church Lady did a drum solo on Saturday Night Live, and it was like Dana Carvey knows what he's doing.
Oh yeah, dude. He does.
It was awesome.
I love that, and then I love it. And when he smashes those last cymbals, he's like, and that guy just walks up silently behind him. It's just like, dude, you're amazing.
Burnout.
Thanks. Yeah. I like to play.
I mean, if you're a drummer in the world and you've never said that, you've never said thanks, I like to play, and just hit the bell of a cymbal without a kick drum on it, like, you're not a real drummer. Speaking of Garth too, like Dana Carvey's improvisation is incredible. The Foxy Lady, that's funnier to me today than it ever was.
I agree.
Apparently it was improv. Mm-hmm. Like he was just supposed to, like the camera was supposed to zoom in and knock him back. But they played the Foxy Lady. He just stood up and started doing the dance. Foxy.
When he gets confused by his thrust.
Yes. His little flannel wrapped around his waist is very phallic. And just go flop, flop.
Apparently Mike Myers like hated him doing that. He's like, what are you doing? And that made the final cut. He's like, what the hell's going on? Why is this in there? It's like, it's fucking funny.
Because it's awesome.
And very funny. Like, people's like in the reviews and everything, they're saying that Dana Carvey is not funny. I think he's almost funnier, if not better than Wayne in this movie.
This is one of those instances where I do think he is hilarious. And the unfortunate thing is, again, this is how I basically met Dana Carvey.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think this is
the funniest he's ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be completely honest
with
you.
I agree.
I've seen his other stuff. I've seen him in doing other bits. I've seen him come back. Master of Disguise.
It is horrible.
It's some of it's tough to watch. I'm sorry, man.
His comedic, like as a comedian, is hilarious. He's okay. One of the best voice improv. Impersonations.
Yeah.
He's incredible at impersonations.
Yes.
But yeah, movie wise, like, eh,
yeah, you know,
didn't and really hit the mark.
He really came into like doing kind of creating almost the micro impressions too, where he does those impersonations.
Yeah.
But it's like 5 seconds of like an actor or somebody doing a small thing, like stubbing their toe. And so, you know what I mean? And so he kind of started in on that, and yeah. It was very funny. Yeah.
I like to add that Benjamin's Place looks like Patrick Bateman's place in American Psycho. Like he's like
the same?
Almost oh, the same thing. Like so he's very clean, just like plain art on the wall and books about how to please a woman, rip for her pleasure.
We never saw that Shakey's waitress ever again.
That's right.
Benjamin might just be a serial killer.
That the product placement scene is just so perfect.
It might be my favorite scene.
It's like. Like even there's that weird black and white video of a hand holding some pills.
Little yellow, different.
Nuprin. Little yellow, different. I can't talk about this anymore. It's giving me a headache. Here, take two of these. And then he just like tips the bottle over, and there's just two pills in it.
you do one for Felix Gray right now. Do one for Felix Gray right now.
Do one for Felix.
Yeah, do it. Do it.
It's like all this light. It's just getting right to me.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. That's so much better.
Do we have any Pepper Joes?
You know what really makes me hungry? Podcasting. Mm. And the only thing that goes good with any sort of meat or any sort of food at all, Pepper Joe's hot sauce.
I just ran a marathon. You know what I'm craving? Liquid sustenance.
Oh my God.
Anyway, we're off the rails.
There we go.
Okay, let's move on.
Well, hold on.
Last choice. And it's the choice of a new generation.
My last part of, like, I don't know why certain movies like this, there's the little things that stick with you that, like, I don't think other people think of. For me, it's the... It's when Wayne finally gets Cassandra and he's there. First of all, it's the only scene where Wayne is not wearing a hat.
Oh, I hate it.
And it looks really weird.
I hate it.
Because that's clearly a wig, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, like it just looks really weird to me that this is the only scene he doesn't have a hat on. And he's got his little tidy whities.
Yeah.
But these two, the camera one, camera mm-hmm. two.
Camera one.
It's really camera funny. Two.
But she answers the phone. And she's like, oh, hey, Anthony. He goes, who's Anthony?
Who's Anthony?
My drummer. I don't know why that's one of the funniest lines of the movie to me.
Hikes up his tidy whities, his ass is just hanging out. And he goes up to the mummy thing and like, just clenches his butt cheeks.
It's like he's trying to pick it up. He's like.
Oh, it's so fucking funny.
Gratuitous sex scene.
I also love when they do meet up again and they go to the rooftop and then you see Stacy. It's like when he says, "Hello, Stacy." It's like they're talking about her like in Cantonese. It's like she has very nice legs but very low self-esteem.
I like when she's like, I learned English from the Police Academy movies. And, like, are we talking Winslow?
Yeah, we all did.
And then, sure enough, the subtitles just keep going. And Wayne's just like,
Do you know what Sisa Bindouah means?
Sisa Bindouah. Uh-uh.
It means, where is the toilet?
Sisa Bindouah.
Sisa Bindouah.
Well, you're scaring me.
Yeah.
All right, let's move it on. So at the Alex Cooper concert, Wayne and Garth go backstage and make some important contacts. While filming the revamped Wayne's World under Benjamin's oversight, Wayne and Garth find it difficult to adjust to the professional studio environment. After Wayne ridicules Noah Vanderhoff on the show, he's fired, leaving Garth to host the show on his own. This infuriates Garth and jeopardizes their friendship. This soundtrack is really good. We talked about it a little earlier, like some songs that are actually in the movie, like Loud is Love.
Yeah.
Or sorry, Loud Love by Soundgarden are not actually on the soundtrack, which is disappointing because yeah. it's such a great song. But one of the songs that is on there is Sicamecanico by Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh yeah.
And it's like it's one of those weird songs where it so perfectly fits the scene. There, it's a shot from behind them while they're driving down the interstate and they're going to the concert.
Yeah,
and it's such vintage. It was recorded for Blood Sugar Sex Magik, but it never made the album. Mm. But that song fits so fucking perfect in that scene. Like I don't know why it makes the song better.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's isn't that the one where he's pulling the licorice from the dispenser?
Go. So cool.
And it's classic and Chili Peppers.
Mirthmobile.
it's so good, man.
It's a great song.
Oh, my gosh.
Alice Cooper is the fucking best. Like, 80s Alice Cooper, like, this kind of era. Like, he's old as fuck. But, I just heard a podcast where someone just saw him, and he's still, amazing on stage.
Doing the devil's work, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love him in this movie, and the fact that he's like this history buff, which he is in real life, apparently. He's just this history buff. Like every town he goes to on tour, he's just like, well, I find this more interesting than playing rock shows or seeing boobies, you know?
And I guess they never told him, they just told him that you were just going to perform a song, and then they handed him all that dialogue, and he goes, all right.
It's essentially a monologue that they just hand to him. Milwaukee certainly had its fair share of visitors. French settlers have been coming to the Wisconsin area since the early 1800s.
Isn't that right, Sean?
wasn't this land owned by Indians? Why, yes, Pete, it was.
Why, yes, Pete, it was. In fact, Milwaukee is actually pronounced Miliwake, which is Algonquin for the good land.
It's so classic. It's so fucking classic. And he apparently said that, like, from that moment on, the "we're not worthy" is just all he gets for the rest of his life. People just bow down and we're not worthy.
We are not worthy.
We are not worthy.
Does this guy know how to party or what?
It's it's my second favorite, from the ad portion of the movie. This is his performance is so funny to me. I love it every time.
And for reference, from anyone out there that's never gone to a large concert and gone backstage and met the band, I'm going to tell you one thing: this movie got wrong. After the concert, no one plays their instrument backstage. Right. So there's a guy noodling on the guitar. Yeah. It's like, that doesn't happen.
No.
Yeah.
We're not playing instruments anymore. We've done it.
We've already done that.
It's done.
We don't need to practice anymore tonight.
Is backstage passes still a thing?
I think so.
Because I met Rob Zombie, but it was before the show. Rob Zombie and Korn, and it was just in a different room.
Yes, like a meet and greet thing.
Yeah, just a meet and greet thing, which was life. But
this is very different. They're going into their suite, their green room suite.
That used to happen quite a bit.
Is that right?
It used to just be this giant road party thing, where the best you'd have multiple levels. I had a Korn backstage passes in 1999.
Damn.
And there were multiple levels of passes, right? Like the one pass got you into this big area where everybody hung out and where there was no band members. And then the next pass got you into where the roadies were.
Okay.
And then the next pass got you into where the band was.
Wow.
There was this weird little, and of course I didn't make it. I wasn't a hot chick in leather pants.
Sure.
I was just a guy that's like, I really love your music, Jonathan Davis.
You're a hot chick in leather pants to me, Mike.
Thanks, man.
You are.
How did you guys completely forget about Chris Farley being in this movie?
Dude.
100%.
First movie role.
It's one of my favorite little scenes of this whole thing. When they go outside, yeah, and that is maybe my favorite moment of this entire movie.
You reference that a lot.
I do it a lot. He's like, he's got to be big. It's got to be big. He hates to fly. He's like, yep, he'll actually be going down to St. Louis, be coming back up in Chicago.
Funny, but doesn't he move? He points to the wrong direction. He goes, no, it's right here.
On his way to Detroit.
Just being his first movie role.
Chicago.
Right?
His way to Detroit.
Get lost right here.
So is he the same guy in Wayne's World 2, though? Are we assuming that he's the same guy?
Dude, I would imagine.
I want that.
I'm guessing he is, right?
Yeah.
Because he's kind of a bouncer at this Alice Cooper show, so he becomes a bouncer at the next one, right?
Yeah.
At
What do we think about Wayne's World 2? Can you
do you think we're ever going to do that movie?
Yeah, maybe.
I love it. It's I think the it's same because they came out so close together. They're the same thing.
They're the same movie.
It's just, the same thing. It's just the second
Jim Morrison
part of it.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
They add some weird silliness to it, like, and they could have picked anyone else to play Jim Morrison, but yeah, it's fine.
When they pick that guy who looks nothing
Jim Morrison. He just looks like a blind dude.
A blind dude on drugs.
Yeah, he is.
I like it just as much as the first one, but yeah. This movie is just what it is, and obviously we'll get to that.
So who's your worst villain, Christopher Walken or Rob Lowe? I mean, it's always got to be Christopher Walken.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to punch him either, but yeah.
That is very true, actually. And also, it's like, well, who's the old lady? That's my old lady.
He is really good at that.
Del Preston? Yes. He's the highlight.
We had to beat them to death with their own shoes.
Ozzy's not going to go on unless he's got a brandy glass filled with 1,000 brown M&Ms.
But anyway, Ozzy went on and did a great show.
he's like traumatized by his own like comedy. He's like, we had to beat him to death with our own shoes.
But anyway,
okay. Anyways, I want to talk about, since AJ's being great at acting right now, Kurt Fuller in this movie as Russell.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You are Kurt Fuller.
Really?
Yes. Like all of his roles, like, you just remind me of him. Like, you could be Russell in this movie.
Russell? My guys.
Yes.
You're my guys.
Come on now.
So when he says, I mean, we're looking down on Wayne's basement, only that's not Wayne's basement. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
And he goes, Garth, that's a haiku.
Garth, that was a haiku.
So right. I had to look it up. Do you know what a haiku is?
It's a short.
It's five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables, okay. And I'm like, this doesn't. What is this joke?
Yeah.
But if you break it down, I mean, we're looking five down on Wayne's basement only seven. That's not Wayne's basement five.
Oh, wow.
I don't understand the joke. I don't get what's going on here.
He just had Garth. A haiku in his mind, and he's like, "Hey, that's, Garth, that sounds like one."
But I think the joke is, why would he recognize that? Like, Garth, that was a haiku.
All right,
dude. And the green screen. Hi, I'm
in
from
Delaware.
If I ever go to Delaware, that's what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah.
To be whisked away to Delaware.
Hi, I'm in Delaware. I think Penelope Spheeris is actually in that booth.
Is
too.
She?
That's her director cameo. But I like the whole self-aware comedy too of when they were talking to Chris Farley's character, the bouncer. He's like, he gave us a lot of information that might be important. I love it. That's so brilliant to me. But he brings on the sponsor. He brings his wife and everything. Yep. And what, Tom DeLuise or something? What's his name? From Encino Man?
Yeah, my fucking
Michael,
man.
Michael
my
DeLuise.
Dude.
I don't know why he's not in more movies. I love him in this movie, especially in Encino Man.
He killed it in Encino Man, yeah. Dude. And he was so fucking good in this. His name is Alan in this movie.
Alan, that's right.
And actually, it was the same year. So he did this and Encino Man in the same year.
That's
and like,
right.
Why didn't he do more?
Yeah.
He's like a good-looking dude. He's apparently... He feels like a good actor to me.
I
don't
think
you
so.
Think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why did he do more?
I just can I just say your wife is a babe.
Man, can I just say your wife is a babe? Well, thank you. He's like, do I scare you? Do you want me to?
I love it.
We did forget the funniest scene of the movie.
Okay.
Is the street hockey scene.
Oh God.
Oh yeah. Oh,
that's right. Like that to me, like, because we all grew up playing like street hockey.
Yeah.
That was, I don't know if it came from, if this movie revitalized it or what, but we would do what they were doing in the street. Game on, mm-hmm. game off. But I am asking all Chicago Blackhawks fans out there to stop doing the trope. I mean, it's just so tired. It is tired of wearing a Griswold 00 yeah. jersey and switch to a Campbell 22.
Yeah, Campbell 22.
That's what I'm just asking you guys. Like, yeah. I know you're not
Campbell 22.
Yeah, I know you're not fans anymore because they're not good, and I know you don't pay attention anymore. But just get off the trope.
I love
Move
this.
To a Campbell 22.
I love this. And so St. Louis is still in the playoffs, or?
Well... Hey, at least we made the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
But when What's his girlfriend's name? Or his ex-girlfriend's name?
Oh my God.
Psycho Hose Beast.
When Psycho Hose Beast goes,
Stacy.
Hi, Stacey. Wayne. Hi. That was a moment that we rewound so many times when she hits that car.
Dude, I can't tell you how many times me and my brother Bob just lost it over and over and over on the VHS.
It's unbelievable.
There's something about a physical comedy bit in a movie where the camera is just locked off. Just pointed at a car.
Go.
And the actor just does the thing. You know, it's all sound effects to me. Yes. I think it's just that her hitting the car and tumbling over, and obviously her
<She's>
reaction.
Okay,
it's the dynamics of it, man. It's like you said, it's her going very slowly, and it's kind of quiet.
Hi, Wayne.
And it's hi. Just, hi. It's the second hi for me. Is that what does it? Because she could have just said hi, Wayne, and then back to them, and then she hits the car with the hi.
Apparently they tried the same joke on Rollerblades for her.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just didn't quite hit the same. No. That's absolutely correct, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah. I forgot to mention when they're doing their Benjamin Perdue show at this point, the theme song.
Wayne's World, Wayne's World, party time. Excellent. It's Friday night.
Party on, Wayne, and party on, Garth.
Yeah, that guy. Okay. Welcome to Wayne's World. Party on, Garth.
I guess.
All right. This is so fucking good, man.
All right.
Party on, Wayne, and party on, Garth.
Wayne's holding the. Party on, Wayne, and party on, Garth.
I mean, it did add better production value to the show. I just right. want to throw that out there.
We fly in the sign, please.
We got to get a guy like
that's
that.
That's the sign.
Yeah.
We got to get a guy like that to introduce us.
Yeah.
All right, so scene four, jealous of the attention Benjamin is giving Cassandra, Wayne and Garth reconcile and hatch a scheme to win Cassandra back by getting her a record deal. While Garth and their friends infiltrate a satellite station with the aid of Benjamin's assistant, Wayne goes to Cassandra's video shoot but embarrasses himself in an attempt to expose Benjamin's ulterior motive. Cassandra initially tells him to go home, but upon realizing that Benjamin is up to no good, she changes her mind and leaves for Aurora with Wayne.
I get that Benjamin is like trying to like just kind of make a buck out of this and doesn't really care who he crushes and everything. But when he's like when he has a Noah's Ark or with Vanderhoff on Noah's the show arcade. And he's got like Sphincter Boy on the cards and everything, he's like, he's using the cards and then he gets mad at that. But that's like that's the show though. Like it's, that's what you bought.
It's his fault because he said I'm a big fan, but clearly he didn't do his research. All he saw was that 5 seconds before he banged the Shakey's
exactly.
waitress.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So he didn't realize that they make fun of every guest that comes on the
right.
show.
Yeah.
It's his fucking fault.
Yeah.
It is. There's no reason that, and again, I'm going to bring it back around to it. You can't fire Wayne from Wayne's World.
Right.
And then what? You're going to bring in some random guy and just call him Wayne? That doesn't work.
Yeah.
So you.
That would have been
it's like replacing one of us.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Exactly. It's yeah. Like, you can't fire one of us. It's not.
Not.
I'm having a good time. But that's the thing is. Okay, so you wanted it for the advertising, but then you're going to fire the host, and so the show is now kaput, and so you can't do advertising for Noah's Arcade.
If I'm gone off of this show, who's going to say fuck?
That's right.
Every other sentence.
Sean, it's okay. Don't...
It's okay. I think I've surpassed you on customer versus.
Who knows? Where are we at here?
Well, there was one interesting theory I saw that I had never noticed. Dana Carvey, so Garth's working on that robot hand.
Yes.
I had never thought about this in my life, and Benjamin shows up.
That's my prop.
No, Jeremy can't have the... Damn it.
Jeremy's prop one. Is a robot hand.
Benjamin shows up, and he like is discussing the changes to the show, and the hand like starts going crazy. And the theory is that Garth is just a technological wizard and that he's building a robot to kill Benjamin. And that this hand recognizes that Benjamin's in the room and starts going crazy after Benjamin.
No, like, we don't like change.
We don't like change.
We fear change.
awesome. Well, and then you get the T-1000 cameo, which we talked about in the T2 episode.
Yeah.
Which, if you haven't seen that, that's an awesome the T-1000 has shown up in a ton of episodes.
Yeah.
But I have to admit that when I first saw this movie, I had not seen T2, so I had no fucking clue what was happening here. I'm like,
did you see Laverne and Shirley then too?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, what is happening? Okay. Anyway, move on to the next.
It's such a good cameo. Like, I love that he reprises this and does this for a little movie for 10 seconds, whatever it is.
They put the glove on the bottle.
He's convincing, man. Yeah. Like he's T-1000 again, and the way he like. They should. I'm sorry. I was just in it. Like he's like right there. You know.
Have you seen this boy?
Yeah. He gets that a lot too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
God, I bet.
I can only imagine.
The way when Wayne suspects that Cassandra is doing shit with Benjamin, the way he says, "Maybe he's poking you.
Maybe he's poking you."
Fuck, man. If I said that to anybody, like I would get fucked up. Like, that is brutal. Like, whoa, what an accusation! How dare you, dude? That's fucked up.
Well, first he screws me, then he screws you. It's Dutch door action.
God damn.
Living a sheltered life in the suburbs of Chicago.
Check your ego, bro.
Jeez, bro.
Dutch door action.
Can you name all the Saturday Night Live adaptation movies that have been out there?
Superstar.
You don't have to name them all.
Superstar,
but like,
Blues Brothers, Wayne's World.
Wayne's World 2. Coneheads.
Coneheads, yeah. Damn, that's a good
one. Stewart Saves His Family.
No.
Blues Brothers 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Night at the Roxbury, Superstar, Ladies Man, It's Pat. They made a movie.
They did.
The worst movie ever made.
Is Barb and Star one?
No.
Okay.
But MacGruber is also
MacGruber,
one.
MacGruber, yes.
And I think, because you look at this, Blues Brothers for me is the best of all these movies.
Yep.
In my opinion. Followed by Wayne's World, followed by Wayne's World 2, and then it's just like, ugh.
I like
MacGruber. But then MacGruber like comes in at the end and helps save the franchise.
I have a soft spot for Superstar too.
Do you really?
Yeah, I really like that movie.
I have a soft spot for Night at the Roxbury.
Yeah, same. Yeah, same.
Yeah.
There was an interesting thought too that do you remember the license plate for the Murphmobile or Mirthmobile?
Uh-uh.
It was FEB259. And there's a theory out there that that stands for February 2nd, 1959. The day the music died was February 3rd, 1959.
Oh.
And that he wants to live forever when the music was still alive.
Wow.
And then the music hasn't died yet.
Oh.
I have no clue if that's real.
If that's a real thing.
You're talking about Big Bopper. And,
yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Buddy Holly or whatnot.
Yeah.
God damn.
Iowa? Not Clear Lake.
Clear Lake,
Iowa.
Clear Lake. Surf that's ballroom, right. Dude.
The surf ballroom.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we're famous for killing music.
Oh, wow.
Here in Iowa. Wow. So yep. There you go.
That's fun.
That's a good one.
Fun thing to say. Yeah. You know what? Here's the belt. Here's the belt for that.
I don't want it.
I don't want it. Well, you want to move on to the final
Let's
scene?
Let's do it, yeah.
So the Wayne's World crew hacks into Sharp satellite television and broadcasts the crucial taunt performance from Wayne's basement, where Sharp and Benjamin converge. Unfortunately, Sharp declines to offer Crucial Taunt a record contract, and Wayne's life falls apart. Dissatisfied with this ending, Wayne and Garth try a Scooby-Doo ending and eventually a mega happy ending in which Cassandra successfully signs a record contract and begins a relationship with Wayne.
One of my favorite lines in the whole movie is, "Garth, you've never been mad at anything in your life." Just no passion from Garth ever whatsoever. I love that kind of idea.
I mean, I handled it okay. But you shouldn't have bailed on me, man. About F, you're a gimp. Just like, dude, like, Wayne's pretty like he gets by this point, he's gotten real harsh on everybody.
Yeah.
I lost my girl. I lost my best friend.
He's been kind of
a
Dave in Encino Man about all this shit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Oh, God, he is, isn't
oh,
he?
Man.
Shit.
That's a good point.
Like, everybody owes me something, you know?
Yeah, right? I don't owe anybody anything, but they owe me shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, like, upon rewatch, like, you're meant to hate Benjamin so much for all this, right? But, like, the older me is kind of like, well, like, Benjamin, like, gave you guys $10,000,
yeah,
which you didn't have, and now is going to take your show to the next level. and you signed a contract that apparently you didn't read. And
you didn't read it.
And now you're mad at what's happening here.
Yeah.
It's like I'm kind of sad about how older me thinks about some of these movies sometimes. It's like, well, that's fucking real life, Wayne. Grow up.
You know what I think is that I'm kind of mad at this movie for when I was a kid thinking like, yeah, you can't mess with their artist vision and this and that. And it's like, yeah, but then they're going to just keep doing it in their basement. They're not actually going to go do anything. In reality, you're right. Benjamin is going to take this show to the next level. Unfortunately, you're now dealing with, like, you know what the worst part of, like, this whole transition was? Was the theme song that changed.
That's about it.
And that
now
was
about it.
Now you
got a green screen. Yeah. You got all this cool stuff.
Well, and during the contract signing, he didn't read a damn thing.
No.
Not at all. He just kind of made, I like what you did here.
Yep. He made a joke about it.
Yeah.
And so, yes. Yes.
No, I agree. Like 5 years ago, I would have been on Wayne's side. You know, I've been like, fuck corporate. I don't need money for my art. You know, like we'd go to shows like an hour away in Illinois or something like that, and they pay us, and we're like, no, you keep it because we are artists and we want you to keep going. We need that money to get home. You know, like it's we need that money to keep doing this show.
I've got
the way that we do
payment.
Exactly. Yes,
it's like, come on. I just, you're right. At all things considered, is Benjamin probably kind of a douche? Yeah,
yeah.
Does he wear too baggy of pants? Yeah,
absolutely.
That ass is way too tight to be wearing those pants.
Damn right. You know, that's a lucky cop. Anyways, but yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, Benjamin's actually not as bad as it all seems. It's like,
humanize the goons is what we do here.
That's what we do.
I mean, hey, that's the world.
Yeah.
You signed up for this.
Yeah. Yeah. You signed the contract.
Obviously,
bro.
His heart's not in it, but he's in it for money. But if he gets paid, Wayne and Garth get paid.
Well, and let's be honest, like, Wayne can't be getting a Cassandra, you know, like that gives too much hope to too many people out there. Like, it's gotta be, it's gotta be Benjamin and Cassandra. Cause like, you can't think, you can't let me think that I could also get a Cassandra.
Right.
You can't let me think that.
If you're funny, man. That's
but
all
I'm
it
not.
Takes. You are. You are sometimes. You're not the one on this show funny, but I'm just kidding.
Damn. Holy shit.
Hey, at least I'm not as short as Frankie Sharp.
Dude.
Holy shit.
Frankie Sharp, Sharp Records.
Never noticed that until this viewing of like, dude is unbelievably short, and I had to look him up. Frank DeLeo, he was in Goodfellas. He was a very small part.
Yeah, you're right. Fuck. What was he?
I can't remember his name, but he was a very small part there.
Anyway,
he's
5'1". 5'1".
Frankie Sharp is 5'1".
So he's got Tom Cruise ability where he could just look at racks all day.
Yeah, yeah. Cassandra's in stilettos standing next to
Frankie Sharp's
Sharp.
Down here.
yeah, Frankie Sharp's down here. My eyes are up here.
There's also a thing, I heard this on a Howard Stern interview with Dana Carvey that unfortunately, like, you'd like to think of Wayne and Garth as like, for real, you know, but Mike Myers was very difficult to work with. It sounds like he's continued to be that way.
Yeah.
But he knows what he's doing. Dana Carvey's a pretty chill guy. Definitely was the bigger person in this movie, and Mike Myers has gone on to such international fame with Austin Powers. But
and Man of Mystery.
But Dana Carvey used to do an impersonation of Lorne Michaels where he would you do the and he brought his he would always bring his pinky up to his mouth, and like there was a major tension for a long time because Dana Carvey thinks Michael Myers stole that impersonation for Austin Powers. And then
for
never
Dr. Evil?
Yeah, and then never gave credit to him for that, and they have since like I guess reconciled a bit about that, but like. That's pretty shady. Like
that
it's
is.
Like you just made the biggest career of your life off of like this impersonation.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some credit there or something, but yeah, I mean, oh well, what is it?
It's crazy to think about that, like, cuz even in interviews and like everything that Mike Myers has done now, and I'm sure he's mellowed out and everything, that thinking back, like, that there was some tension, that he was difficult to work with, that he was like kind of dramatic and, you know, difficult with everybody on set and very, 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 very controlling in aspects of this.
Well, the director Spheeris, she blames Mike Myers on getting her pretty much fired from the sequel, or not hired for the sequel, because he had such a hard time working with her on this movie. And it's such a shame. And I read that she has since forgiven him because she saw Austin Powers and saw, I was like, that's brilliant.
Okay.
I still held a little bit of resentment towards you, but I see you're a talented motherfucker. Right. So it's a shame, like, researching these movies and doing this nostalgia kind of dive, because it takes it takes a little bit of the light out of it, because I'm like, I wish everything was just like so copacetic and fine, but to know that Mike Myers was kind of a dickhead is a little heartbreaking.
Canadians
during this filming, if Mike Myers was an ice cream flavor, he'd be pralines and dick.
That's good.
My favorite lines. It's so overshadowed when he's like, give me the flashlight, Russell.
Dude, I love it.
Give me the flashlight, Russell. Like, it's a gun. He's like pointing it like he's...
It's okay.
It's okay. He's going to be okay. Praline.
He, like, unloads it.
Yeah.
That's why I think he's better than Mike Myers in this movie.
Probably.
One of those scenes, yeah.
It landed on my keys.
You say that all the time.
I say it so often.
Wait up.
Guys,
I landed on my keys.
All right.
Oh, you got anything else on that, boys?
No, that's it.
All right, we have stripped away the nostalgia. We've looked at this with a modern eye. AJ, what do you think your modern day rating is on this bad boy?
I really enjoyed watching this movie again, and I didn't feel the need to turn it off or like, oh, I'm good, I can stop at the three quarters mark again. I like seeing the whole movie pan out. Essentially, there's like doing the research now, like you were saying, Sean, it kind of adds a little bit of a tint to the whole thing. And watching the jokes and still laughing like out loud pretty much by myself, like just at these jokes, that's a great sign of a good movie. Unfortunately, you just can't be a cover band and get a record deal, though. Okay, I'm sorry, guys.
Sorry, you're not allowed.
You're not allowed to. You can't play these songs and be like, oh yeah, no, we get a record deal. Doesn't happen that way. So, unfortunately,
thank you for saying that.
Because of this record deal that shouldn't exist, it's just false hope. Gave me false hope for basically until I was 25. I'm going to go ahead and give this a 7.2.
Sean, what about you, buddy?
What was that, 7.5?
You were a 7.5 nostalgia. Yeah. AJ came down a little bit.
Watching this movie, I agree with AJ wholeheartedly. It doesn't ever get old. It is just like one of those movies that's kind of a warm blanket at night. You know, you get done with the day and you put on Wayne's World, and it's always a delight. I love I love movies, like especially comedies, where there's things that you think are really funny, but you aren't sure if other people do. But once you meet that person, you get really excited. Yeah. You know,
you thought that was funny,
when I said like his smile towards like.
Yeah,
that smile. Like I don't find anybody else who thinks that's funny, and I like that. It feels personal in that way. What AJ said, like listening and finding that Mike Myers is kind of hard to work with, it taints the movie a little bit. But I can't judge the making of it. I have to judge the movie. I'm the same. 7.5
for Shauner. I'm gonna go 7.8 actually. I'm going up from my nostalgic rating. I just think it's such an important movie to 90s culture. And it doesn't, like, there's nothing like we can look back on this movie and go, ooh, they shouldn't have done that. Like which we do on a lot of 80s and 90s movies. Like it holds up completely. It's an all the way through movie. It's great. It's the soundtrack. It's so important culturally. So yeah, I'm a 7.8.
You're right. You're right when you say that it's weirdly like culturally important, kind of.
It's just like
it is.
It's just like an important piece. It's a time capsule piece of the 90s.
Right.
It really is. And
what'd Tyler say?
Executive producer Tyler Dark says, this one's going to hurt, guys. But with my modern viewing, Wayne's World to me is definitely a product of its time.
Ooh.
The movie still has some great comedic moments, but I'm not sure if that's me talking or still a little bit of nostalgia. I found it kind of hard to lock in with a lot of the humor being a lot older now. Of course, I see the moments younger me would have been on the ground, side split with laughter. but it just didn't hit me the same as it did back then. I still loved the whole cast, and while, of course, I remembered the big roles like Mike Myers and Rob Lowe, I swear I did a real double take when randomly and for such a quick bit, I saw Chris Farley. I'll always have mad respect for this movie, especially for all the laughs I had as a kid, so I want to be as gentle with my score and pray my fellow Patreon members don't burn me at the stake for this one. Without further ado, my modern eye rating is going to have to be a 5.9 out of 10.
Wow.
But that's why we average this stuff. So
hey, group, I feel you, man.
Group modern day rating is going to be a 7.1, which is going to put us tied with the Fast and the Furious.
Oh, no. You know what?
I'm just saying, is this a movie that you, if you put on, you're going to watch all the way through?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Both of those.
Yes. I would do it. I think.
You may not seek it out. Oh, but that's a double feature.
Are you the Mirthmobile and all them other cars?
I wonder.
Shut the fuck up.
I wonder which ones of Dom's crew had a licorice dispenser. It's probably Jesse, right? Yeah. It's late, but it's great, baby.
Well, with that, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for being here. Tune in next Wednesday for another great episode chosen directly by our Patreon members, Major League. That is our baseball movie of the summer. It's going to be a good one. And then we're going to follow that up with another beautiful top five episode. And if you're new to the podcast, go back this time last year. We did Bloodspurt. All one word. Bloodspurt.
Great, great movie.
That's a fun
go
one.
Check that episode out. The taking time to watch someone reminisce is a half an hour in that movie.
Also, humanized Chong Li.
Yep.
And just kumite, baby.
Kumite.
And last but not least, we got a voicemail. Let's listen to today's voicemail, 319-804-9596.
Hey, guys. My name is Jared. I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. Just wanted to let you know I love the podcast.
Thank you.
I also was a bit surprised at how some of you look. I thought maybe Mike would look like kind of like a Durs, you know.
A Durs?
But instead, he has this crazy awesome beard and is badass looking. Anyway, that's not a slight. Love the podcast. I'm hoping you guys will do Hook one day. That was my favorite movie growing up.
We will.
I even named my dog Rufio.
Nice.
Show, so. Yeah. Thanks again, guys. Take care. Bye.
We will be doing
Hook.
We need another Spielberg that's coming up in the summer, but we're going to be doing Hook, I guarantee it.
I look like a Durs in my head.
There you go.
Yeah.
I can honestly say that I didn't realize what Dustin Hoffman looked like except for Hook for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. I have to say that.
It's coming.
Can't wait.
We're coming. We can cut that out.
Ew, gross.
All right, thanks for listening, guys. Please stay in touch with us by following on all of our social media platforms at Confused Breakfast on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and Confused BeFast on Twitter. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on the podcast platform of your choice right now.
Also, we have merch. You know you want to rep the Confused Breakfast in public. Mugs, stickers, shirts, all kinds of goodies. Go to ConfusedBreakfast.com for a direct link.
And don't forget about our voicemail number, 319-804-9596. Links to everything you could ever need from us are in the show notes or at ConfusedBreakfast.com. This includes a way to follow all of us individually in our personal projects that we want you to check out. Mission of the day, tell your friends about us. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.